Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A downed tree may look like a lot of work or an expensive cleanup project to most of us. To Monica Tiffany, it looks like a blank canvas. Monica Tiffany owns McGregor Mercantile along with her husband, and she became a chainsaw artist in 2017. She is here with me now to talk about how this adventure has turned into something much bigger. Hello, Monica.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And this is something you haven't been doing for very long. So take us back to before 2017. What was your relationship to chainsaw art at that time?
Well, I would say there wasn't any specific connection. I grew up loving art. I don't have any formal art training per se. I love drawing and sketching, mostly with pencil, and painting crafts, that kind of a thing. But I will say my husband and I are avid Iowa State Fair goers. So one of my favorite events at the fair was always watching the chainsaw carvers. So I could sit and watch them for hours and admired how many talented people there are out there that can do that. And I've told him for years, no, I really think if I put my mind to it, I could do it. So pre-2017, it was in the back of my head as far as that is a really cool art form that I would love to try, but hadn't really taken it any further than that, I guess, at that point.
So what made you take that next step? I mean, it was a bit of really bad luck that made you actually pursue this, right?
Well, we had been planning a summer vacation. 2017 came and we ended up with a tornado in our little town, and we had debated canceling our vacation and we just decided, you know what, we had damage to our building, we just need to get away, get a breather. And so we were finishing making some plans and, you know, online Googling this and that, and I came across a chainsaw carver out in Washington State. And it wasn't quite where we were headed for vacation, but the dates fell into place of when we already booked some time off. So I threw the idea at Paul, my husband, and he has been my biggest supporter through this whole thing. And he was like, let's do it. Let's go for it. Let's get you out there and try it. It was a 3-day course, a very basic beginner course. And we just decided on a whim that instead of going to our original destination, Colorado, we would take a detour, go a little farther, and we ended up seeing Washington State.
Wow. So when you took this course, how much experience had you had actually holding a chainsaw? Because that's a little intimidating.
It is. Actually, I have to admit that on our drive, so we pulled our camper out there. On the drive out there, I had a small panic attack because it all of a sudden sunk in. Like, I've sunk a little money into this course, and I've never picked up a chainsaw. Like, I hope I get there and everything goes okay. But yeah, prior to that, I'd never even held one. I admired the art, but never used one physically myself.
So what was that course like for you?
The course was amazing. Of course, I had a few butterflies before getting there because I realized what I had signed up for. But part of the course and the reason I chose that course was because we had a full day dedicated just to chainsaw safety, learning the machine, learning how to start it, learning the basics of adding the oil and gas. And so there was that component in it that kind of settled me down that first day. I was like, okay, this is cool. I knew instantly that I was texting my husband on one of my breaks, like, new favorite hobby. I knew I was falling in love with it when I got out there. So yeah, it was a great basic course, and I don't want to get ahead of you, but it's like the instructor said, it's kind of like any other art form. This, he can teach you some of the basics, but you have to go home and make it your own. So even today, my bears don't look like his bears. You kind of add your own little techniques and tips and tricks, I guess.
So during this course, were you specifically taught to carve a bear?
We ended up doing, I think I did 5 projects in the 3 days that I was there. So yes, bears are a a typical carving that you will see in most anywhere you see a carver, there will probably be some bears involved. So yes, we did two different bears, like a little half bear, and we did a standing bear. I did a mushroom, I did a fish, I did a tree, I did an eagle. So he kind of gave us a little barrage of items so that we weren't carving just one thing, but it's kind of fun because once you've carved one thing and get a few techniques down, then you can transfer those into making your next object, whatever it may be. So kind of one thing led to another through the class.
And all right, you're absolutely right. The majority of chainsaw carvings that I have seen are bears. Do you know why? What's the deal with the bears?
I think that part of it is just the nature of you're carving things that come from the forest. We were in Washington State, so there's just, I think something about the trees and the forest is bears. I don't know why, but I will say to date, since I've been back and selling my little carvings, the bears have been the most popular. So I don't know what it is about a happy little bear that makes people laugh when they're holding the little sign that says something cute, but I don't know why. They just tend to be the top selling item, I guess.
So you took this course and you came home, and I know that you didn't intend for this to be a part of your business. After you took that course, what was going through your mind about what you would use this new skill for?
Well, to be honest, I just thought it was going to be a new fun little hobby. Coming home, I was thought, oh, I know what all of, you know, the next gifts for any of my family are going to be, right? They're going to be a new chainsaw carving. So I came home just wanting to practice and make some fun things to give away. And so that was kind of my initial intention. I didn't really have a thought in my head about bringing it into our little store at all. But one thing led to another once I got home.
What did lead to the other? What made this change?
Well, so we got home, and literally the first week, I'm excited just coming off this new class. So our building downtown McGregor is on a little corner street, so I was off to the side of the building carving a bear on the street, and there were some construction workers in town, and a gentleman pulls up mid-morning, and he's like, is that bear for sale? And, like, I would have loved to see my face because I probably had kind of a shocked look on my face. I was like, yeah, it is. So he wasn't even completely done. I said, well, you'll have to come back at lunchtime because I didn't have him quite finished. And he said, that's fine. I'll come back on my break. So I go into panic mode because I use marbles for eyes for their little for the bears. So I had no supplies because we literally just got home. So across the street's an antique dealer. I run into the antique dealer. I'm like, do you sell marbles? Well, luckily he had a jar of old marbles that I was digging through, and I found two black ones. So like by the skin of my teeth, I got this bear put together for this gentleman, and he came back and bought it at lunchtime and was so excited to take it to home to his wife.
Did you have to go online to see how much should I charge for a bear?
I know. Well, it was a little bit off the cuff because I didn't really know. So I threw something out there and he took it. And then literally like a half hour later, a lady pulls up in a car and she's admiring my bears and she asked prices. So I kind of had been thinking about prices since the guy had just left. So she said, how much is that bear? A little bear. And I told her, and she's like, I'd like to order six, please. I about fell. I was like, oh my goodness sakes. Like, maybe I could sell these in my store. So it just kind of was funny how it happened accidentally, but it was, it turned into, we put them in the store now, and it's kind of been a good addition.
So where do you get your wood from?
No pun intended, after word got out that I was chainsaw carving, people came out of the woodwork with piles of wood. So once word spread, people were like, oh, I have this log, or I have a pile of logs, or we just cut all these trees. And it was 2017 after the tornado, so we had hillsides full
of down trees. There were trees everywhere,
yes.
Right.
So to be honest, I really prefer carving on cedar. It's not quite as prevalent in our area, so I do cut on a lot of pine as well. So there is not a shortage of trees to be worked on. In fact, at our little farmstead that we have, I have piles waiting for me. And then also in our little town, we have an arborist that cuts trees for a living. And so if he finds a cool or a unique tree or a tree that has a neat burl or something, that will give it character. Sometimes I come to the shop and there's just some fun stump sitting outside, and he'll send me a text, "Hey, I dropped some cool logs off for you." So people know that I do it, and so that there's a lot of availability to the wood. And then my husband did find a broker where he will get me the Western Red Cedar, which is my favorite and a little bit more quality wood to cut on. So
why
we now buy it by the semi-load so that we have plenty to cut.
And why is Western Red Cedar your favorite?
It's a soft wood, and it's a longer lasting, more resistant wood. So it holds up to the elements better outside. And then as far as carving, a hardwood like an oak or a maple does not cut as easily, where this is a really soft wood. So I told Paul it almost cuts like butter. It just is a nicer wood for forming nice shapes. So it works well.
Now, chainsaw carving still feels like not a very precise way to carve something. Do you feel like you are turning out bears that look like each other, or is every project different?
I think that there is a little similarity in my bears as far as, like I said, when I got back from the class, my bears now don't look like his. I've looked at a lot of carvings online. I've bought books, and I'll think, ooh, I like the ears on this little guy, or ooh, I like the shape of his snout. So I kind of have developed a look that I like. Now, that being said, sometimes the log itself, how it's shaped, will shape what it ends up looking like. So, for instance, I had a log that I wanted to make a bear, like, slumping over it. And as I was cutting it, I ran into a few rotten spots in the log I didn't know were there. And before I knew it, I was like, okay, this isn't going to be a bear anymore. And that one ended up being a turtle, and it turned out amazing. But so sometimes I might start with an idea, and then based on what the wood surprises me with or how the tree was shaped to begin with will affect what the end product looks like. So I would say, yes, everyone is unique. In fact, I tell people if they want three of the same, they will be similar, but they all will definitely have their own characteristics depending on the log.
Now, a lot of people who lose a tree in their front yard want to have that stump that's still part of the ground, you know, carved into something. Do you do that kind of carving, or do you like to only do stumps that are disconnected from the roots?
Well, at this point, I am not shy about telling people I am a new carver. I by no means call myself an expert. So to date, I have not done one that is in the ground, and I wouldn't be opposed to getting to that point in my little chainsaw career, I guess. But at this point, I have only done disconnected ones. And part of that is if I cut my little bear and he's slightly crooked, I can fix it on the bottom. Whereas if I do a carving for somebody that's already in the ground and something goes wrong, then there's no fixing that without chopping it off. So I'm hoping to get there, but I'm still pretty new where I haven't done on-site stuff in the ground.
This was such an interesting leap for you, an adventure you almost didn't take. What do you feel like you've learned from this experience?
Well, like I said, my family, especially my husband, has been the biggest support. And I think it's just important for people, like, if you have a dream or if there's something that you want to try, and I know this might sound a little cliche, but, like, just go for it. Just try it. Because my husband's whole point, because I questioned, like, do we really drive out there and do this? Like, that's a big chunk of our time and our money. And he's like, you know what? You're going to always wonder if you were good at it, or if I should have done that, I should have tried it. Because we had both come to the conclusion on the drive out there, like, if this goes bad and it doesn't work out, it's okay. At least I'll know that it didn't work out. So my push for people was, if you want to try something, just try it. Just go for it. Have fun and try it, because it could lead to something really great.
Has it changed how you think about yourself?
I think so, because sometimes we all end up being our own worst critics, I think, and no matter what we do, we can take a picture of ourselves and we're the first to pick ourselves apart. So I think that it builds a confidence in you that we all, I think, are special in our own ways. And so find something that you're good at and love, and it does. It builds your confidence, and I love seeing people smile. My husband and I have our focus on our store has to been this past year to make as much of our own products as possible. And I love it when somebody can come in and they see my carvings and it makes them smile, and I love visiting with people about it. And so it's just been a really neat experience all the way around. And so, yeah, I think it's great for people to try things. And I'll be honest, I've done some carvings that haven't always been my favorite. And I think you just take those things and you improve on them. I've told my husband, my second carving, like, so for instance, if I haven't carved a dog before, my second carving of a dog always looks a little better than my first. So it's practice, it's get out there, it's have fun and laugh when you have to, because something's a little, you know, off. But just keep trying and practicing. And I think that kind of goes for a lot of things in life in general, I guess.
What do you do with your practice sculptures that don't work out?
To date, I haven't had something that I couldn't salvage. So I haven't had anything that's had to go to the burn pile yet. So, it could happen where I just cut them up in little pieces and you never even know it happened. But so far I haven't had anything that's turned out terrible. In fact, I look at my very first bear that I did from class and, man, he makes me smile, because the first time, that was my first one. And I look at it now and I can kind of, you know, you can say, oh, I wouldn't have done this. Or the day that I made it, I thought, wow, this thing is like a piece of gold. Like, it looks so amazing. So it's, and those were the first bears that I think my first ones are not my best work, but those are the ones that people stopped on the street and said, hey, can I buy that? So people, again, it's your being your own critic. Yeah, maybe it was a little rougher than the ones I do now, but they were still cute and adorable and made out of a piece of wood. And so anyway, I think the most important thing is I'm having fun with it. It's kind of a hobby that I enjoy doing, and if people stop buying them, then so be it. I'll keep making them for gifts, and I'll have a bunch around our house or something.
Do you have a dream sculpture, something that you really want to carve that you haven't carved yet?
So we live in the Midwest. We're in farm country. Most of my carvings right now are, I would say, are more of a character grade, where they're kind of like a cartoony, happy people, happy little bears. So I would love, and I've had some requests for like more realistic looking, especially, you know, we're in cattle country. So like a calf or a pig that has a more realistic look. That's kind of my next goal and my next on the radar for things that I'd like to try.
Well, good luck, Monica. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Monica Tiffany, co-owner of McGregor Mercantile and a chainsaw sculptor. This is Talk of Iowa.